Hello, welcome to Jibe Talk in the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles, and in this edition we look forward to the Barcelona World Race with New Zealand's Andy Micklejohn, who's sailing on Hugo Boss with Alex Thompson. We preview the Route de Rhum with France and Oman Sail's Sydney Gavenier, who has a radical proposal for the Volvo Ocean Race. Don't miss it. And we look back at the Maxi Worlds and forward to the Sydney to Hobart with Rahn 2's Tim Powell. All this and Yachting World's Matt Sheehan, who in a sharp contrast with his childhood self, talks about putting wings on moths with Adam May. With so much to get through that for once we're going to skip the news headlines and get straight to the chat. First up, Andy Micklejohn, who sailed around the world aboard Brazil 1 in the 2005-06 Volvo Ocean Race and is now off around the planet again in the Barcelona World Race with Alex Thompson and Hugo Boss. I began by asking how the partnership had come about.
I've known Alex and friends with Alex for 6 or 7 years now, and helped him out with the last boat before the last Barcelona race when he sailed with Andrew Cate. So we've always kept in touch, and sort of when he had another partner who pulled out, that I come along and go sailing with him, and we see if it all works out. We see if we enjoy each other's company and whether we think we can make this work. So it's been a hard couple of months. We've done a lot of sailing and a lot of work, but things have worked out.
Andy, given last time Andrew Cate, well-known navigator, what strengths and skills, how do you divide perhaps the strength and skills between you and Alex in this partnership?
Definitely my skills are in the technical side of things. First and foremost, obviously, being a rigger, it's keeping the boat together. I probably have a lot more of the on-deck responsibilities, keeping the boat sailing fast. I've been looking after the sail program and the speed side of things, so I guess I look after more the on-deck side of things, and Alex is more the navigator.
An interesting dynamic. How much has your previous experience about sailing around the world with rather more people than just one, how much has that stood you in good stead for preparing for this next one?
Well, the goal is obviously the same, to get around without breakages and as fast as you possibly can. And if you can do both of those, you stand a pretty good chance of winning. So the philosophy is the same. The boat that we have, which is the Juan K design Pindar, it's very, very similar to a Volvo 70. So in similar writing moment and sail area. So, we've been able to use a lot of the knowledge that's been gained out of the last two Volvo Ocean races in terms of optimising the boat and what we do with the sail program. Obviously, there's only two of us, but essentially with a Volvo 70, you're only sailing with four people anyway when you're up and going. So you're still fairly short-handed on a 70. There's obvious differences, but it's not like you're sailing with a crew of two compared to a crew of 20.
So how are the two of you settling in at the moment? Because obviously you've been doing a lot of sailing, you mentioned earlier, and how is the partnership working out on the water?
Oh, the partnership's great. Alex has a great sense of humour, but he's incredibly determined. And this is a race he really wants to win, and so we've got a pretty common goal. We're the same age, we're a similar place in life, it's working out really well. Not to say that it's been a lot of hard work, but that's just by nature of the project and trying to get the most we can out of the time that we've got.
Just interested, really. Have you been in touch with Andrew Cate to talk through the adventure last time?
I've seen Cate around the place a lot over the last few years, and sailed with him with Bo Gest last year, and a couple of races, Middle Sea Race and Transatlantic Race. So we've talked a little bit, and he's fairly busy at the moment, but he's definitely on my list to call up and go and have a chat and have a beer and just get his side of the story, that's for sure.
Well, be a bit careful going for a beer with KP. But now moving on, Andy. Obviously, perhaps Alex hasn't enjoyed the greatest luck in a couple of high-profile races recently. Was that ever a concern at all?
It's obviously a concern. I mean, his project, his company is driven by the need to return on the investment for his sponsors. And so results are the ultimate return. So there's a definite pressure there from ourselves as well as, you know, everybody else concerned that we want to do well in this race. You know, we think we've done enough to at least be reliable. Hopefully we've done enough to be fast as well. So, you know, I think probably the most pressure comes from ourselves because, you know, we're competitive people and we're going to win any event that we take part in.
Andy, a final thought, really. Sort of what do you now face between now and leaving the start line in Barcelona? How does the next period pan out?
Well, it's incredibly busy. We've got we're in Ibiza at the moment doing some corporate trailing. Then we have to take the boat back to the UK. So that's 7 or 8 days back to England. We've got a race refit planned. We're, you know, hope to nail down in all of the little bugs that we've found over the last few months. And then we've got to bring the boat back to Barcelona. So, you know, a couple of weeks off each, but the rest of the team's really got some work ahead of them, and you know, we've got to lead that with the decisions that we make. So it's going to be a busy time leading up to December the 31st.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for joining us. I'm sure we'll be chatting again just before the start of the race. Good luck with that, and look forward to hearing how you both get on.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, and we'll definitely keep you posted.
Next, an old friend of Jibe Talkin, the one and only Sidney Gavenier, who after sailing in the last 4 Volvos, has returned to France with Oman Sail for his first ever Route de Rhum.
Yeah, it's my for an old man or becoming old, it will be my first Route de Rhum. And I'm really delighted because, you know, for me, it's, as a Frenchman, as you say, coming back to the French circuit by the big door, because the Route du Rhum is a major event in France. It's great. In fact, it is because of my Volvo career or my Volvo time, Volvo Ocean Race time, that I'm back to the French circuit, because Oman Sail is run by Anglo-Saxons, or English to be more precise. And I realized that I'm, because of the Volvo, in fact, I'm almost more known in Anglo-Saxon country than in my own country. And the Volvo that took me away from the French circuit is now helping me to come back to the French circuit. So it's a great story.
How have the French welcomed you back, Sydney?
Well, I don't know, but I have to say that the media are pretty attracted by that story, first of all, because Oman Sail and the project of Oman Sail is a fantastic story. You know, it's not a traditional sponsor. You know, it's not a bank. It's not food or whatever. It's a national project. So there's a lot to tell about that, and it's a bit surprising for the French people, French media, to see from Oman coming in a very French race. And also, you know, the journalists, they knew me before, but they couldn't really speak about me because Volvo wasn't such a big thing in Volvo Ocean Race wasn't such a big thing in France, which will change for sure this edition with Groupama and the stopover in Lorient. But no, I'm very well received in my country, yes.
I'm delighted you were welcome back. Now, you've warmed up very well for the Route de Rhum by sailing around Britain and Ireland very fast and breaking the record. What was that trip like?
Well, first of all, the goal of this trip, of this attempt, was to really look for the hardest training I could find, you know, with as many difficulties as possible. And you can easily imagine that when you go around the islands like this with the shipping lanes, wind turbines, fishing boats, sandbanks, and so on, there's a lot of difficulties. And so I've been very lucky, I have to admit, you know, I got the perfect weather at the right time. And so it's really been a fantastic training for example, for the relationship between Marcel Van Triest, who will be the routing me on the Route du Rhum, and myself for our team for communication, for logistic, for testing the reliability of the boat, testing the sailor as a single-handed sailor, you know, which is a special thing as well. And it was also a great present for the team, you know, after the very, very hard work they gave for 2 months to come back with this record.
Sydney, one thing is very different is you're sailing on your own these days. Are you enjoying spending time on your own?
Yeah, there are two things, you know. Really, on the boat, of course, you are on your own, so that's something I love, for sure. I really enjoy it. It's a very different challenge. But sailing single-handed, you're not really alone, because as you know, and we know that very well on the Volvo Ocean Race, you win the race before the start, and all the preparation is so important. And that's, again, even if you're on your own on the boat, you have a team working with you and for you before that. So there's all management as well, which is a fantastic challenge for me. I've been experiencing many different situations of management on the Volvo without being the skipper. So when you're not the skipper, you always think you have the good solutions to problem, but you know as well that being the skipper is a different story, because you have different pressure on you and so on. So for me, this experience is also the possibility to test myself as a manager, and I really enjoy that part as well.
Sydney, I wasn't sure. I it might be a nonsense theory, but I wondered, after what happened on the last Volvo and the fact that things didn't finish quite as well with Puma as they might have done, whether that might have made you think that sailing on your own on a boat, despite the backup team, might be quite a good idea?
No, not at all. It's I didn't choose to sail single-handed. I mean, sailing single-handed is, of course, you need a sponsor for that. You need a partner. And I knew since ever that single-handed was my thing. But same as crew sailing as well, you know, I still very much enjoy crew sailing. The challenge is different. So Puma was a difficult story, I would say, and which happened. And I'm quite happy to have this campaign now, which is really something I live well, you know, and all the signals are positive around it, which is very nice after a tough campaign, I would say. But tough campaign is part of life, so there is no relation between the two.
Excellent. No, thank you for clearing that up, Sydney. But a final thought, I guess, looking at the Route du Rhum and ahead of that, how is the boat? How much have you had to do with setting it all up and getting it all planned? And how do you think you will do in the race?
So the boat is, I have to congratulate Nigel Arendt and Benoit Cabaret, who are the designer, and Thomas Coville, who gave his input in designing these boats, because it's Romaner Majan is a sister ship of Sodebo, except I have no canting mast and no foils, which is very important details. Foils cost sometimes 4 knots. Not in every conditions, but in some of them. So on paper, I would say that I can't win. On paper, paper, there are four boats in front of me with foils. So on paper, again, I should finish fifth. In the meantime, it's, you know, single-handed, you're not always at 100% of the potential of your boat. And it's more a duo between the sailor and the boat. And we know by history that the Route du Rhum always been a very dramatic race with many things happening during the race. So finishing is my first goal, for sure. It's very, very important. And then if the four other guys in front of me don't go fast enough and let me go, I will go. So we'll see what the future tells.
Well, Sydney, I think we all hope you go.
Sorry to interrupt, but I have something else to say and something, a message to Volvo.
Yes.
I will be the first one to sign in when the Volvo will be on the multi-hull.
Interesting. Yes, what did you make of the America's Cup going multi-hull?
I think it's very... I think it's great, you know. It's just sailing without time. I think the old boats, not just the last America's Cup, but the one before, that was very old times, you know. It was, and now they decided to sail with in our time, so I think it's great. There's lots more involved behind that, but for me, just as a simple sailor, I think it's great. I think the mods should be at the Olympics instead of the fin, for example. That would be another logical thing to do. And I think we, since quite a few years now, we are in the multi-hull time. You know, it just goes faster, easier, and also I think it would suit very well to the Volvo Ocean Race because of the market, the Volvo Ocean Race now going in the Middle East and in Asia, which means a lot more miles. And if you do that with a multi-hull, you solve the problem of time. You can go quicker and farther and cover more miles in a shorter time. So I think that would shoot well and would be very interesting and would be in, you know, in the air. I mean, it would be a logical move.
Multi-hulls in the Volvo Ocean Race. You heard it here first, Sydney Gavenier. Next, Yachting World's technical editor Matt Sheehan met up with Moth main man Adam May.
Well, anybody who's followed the international Moth scene will certainly know of Adam May's name. He's been on the scene for many years, both before and since they've gone foiling. And I bumped into Adam down at the TP52 event down in Sardinia. Adam, I think many people might be quite surprised to see you down here.
Well, I've been coaching now for Team Origin for a little while, since the second TP regatta, which came about through a link. I've been working with Ian Percy and Andrew Simpson on their star program for a while, and I sort of been doing some stuff with them, and it rolled into the TP program in many ways, which was nice. So that's why I'm here.
Well, one of the other things that we've just noticed is that some of the pictures of you have cropped up on the net. No big surprise there. But the surprise, perhaps for many, was to see you sailing a Moth with a wing.
Well, it's been a little project I've wanted to do for a number of years. I've always been interested in the C-class cats. That's always an interest of mine. That was sort of almost before America's Cups and sort of Olympic stuff. I'd always been interested in the C-class cats, always the sort of the design side of that. So I'd always followed them and sort of always imagined trying to do a C-class program at some point. So I'd always had an interest, and then just started thinking more and more that I might just be able to do it on a Moth as a starting platform. I couldn't afford to do a C program, but I might just be able to do one for the Moth. And originally sort of decided that, no, it was a stupid idea. You know, these wings don't like to capsize, and why would you be so stupid as to put one on a Moth? And then just started thinking about it and looking at the weights and thinking, well, it might actually be possible. And more and more people started thinking about it and talking about it, and I decided, no, I want to do it and want to be the first to do it. So I sort of started thinking more and more seriously about it and dug out all my sort of file of C-class info and started thinking about it a lot more, and pulled the green light on it and just sort of pushed forwards. And it went for a real simple one to start with, but I was just keen to give it a go. It was a bit of a science project as much as anything else.
And did you build it yourself?
No, I got a friend of mine, an old National 12 helm of mine, Kevin Driver, down at the boatyard in Beer, he did the bulk of it, and I did the sort of final skinning and some of the smaller parts. Initially, I'd planned to sort of try and do it on the cheap, and I'd just get Kev to mill the major parts, and then I would do the rest of the assembly in my workshop. But I got busier and busier with Team Origin stuff coming online, that it was easier just to send design drawings to Kev and he'd build them. And he got really enthusiastic in the project and was really keen, and he was building parts quicker than I could send him drawings. So we started off with a full 3D model drawings, and then we got to some 2D sketches, and then we were meeting up and doing quick scribbles and things. And it was great fun just to sort of do it as a quickly evolving project.
Well, wings are obviously on the minds of a lot of people, certainly anybody who's thinking about America's Cup campaign. So everybody seems to be desperate to know what they're like. What is it like on a moth?
Well, I think the moth, I played very safe and conservative on it, so it's a pretty simple wing, and I'm only just learning the sort of intricacies of it on the moth platform. And early on, I was sort of more worried about, could it survive? Had I got my numbers right on sort of calculating that it would stay up on day one? And then since then, a bit of just, can it survive the capsizes? So that's been more focus initially rather than the performance side. But performance wise it feels a little different, takes a bit of getting used to. You got different feedback, and it you know, it just looks different. You're looking at different cues and things, so it's it's a little different. It's a whole new world, and I'm quite glad I got my timing right on it.
Well, it looks like a pretty unstable platform. I mean, many people will look at a moth and think, how much more difficult do you want to make life for yourself? I mean, just the prospect for many of sailing a foiling moth would be something that defeats most people before they even get close to it. But does it make the boat easier to sail once you've got your head around it? Or where do you think the advantages would be in the long term?
The advantages for using the wing?
On a moth.
Originally I sort of always had a little doodle book of design ideas on the moth, and you know, you sort of start to go from a sleeveless sail to, do you go wing mast, and you start just looking where you might go in the future. And I always had in my mind the end game of a wing, just for the reduced drag, the potential of the power and things you could generate from it, certainly on a limited size rule like the moth. So there's a whole host of sort of benefits, and just a sort of, when you go back to the history of the C-class as well, they were struggled to control leech tension and things, and we were getting to that point where the moth were using a lot of kicker load and things, and just being able to have the sort of the wing structure take that suddenly becomes quite appealing, and sort of all the things started adding up, and like, really would be quite good to do. You know, it was always new, efficient, you know, theoretically it was always going to be a good thing to do. It was more a case of the practicality, because on a moth it was probably the most stupid boat to do it on. You know, everyone's done catamaran platforms and configurations like that a moth was always going to be a bit of a ballsy call. But I figured someone was going to do it, I might as well give it a try.
Yeah indeed. And do you think, I mean, the moth class has always been, being a development class, has a reputation for being very open-minded and adopting ideas, radical ideas, sometimes very quickly. And we see that with the number of foiling moths now that are around. It's basically, a moth is a foiling boat now. Do you think that, I know it's probably early days, but can you see the same kind of revolution happening with wing masts in the moth class?
I don't think so. I think that, I mean, I always thought that I was never going to be standing up saying, you know, this is the best thing for the class, because I honestly don't know if it is or not. I always wanted the class to decide what they wanted to do moving forwards, because we've got this amazing class that we can send our boats around the world in a very small shipping box. You know, no one else can do that. We can travel to different places, and it's really practical, you know, and it all folds down and packs up really small, and you know, you can rock up to your club and unroll your sail and go sailing. So it's brilliant for just casual sailing and things now. And the wing doesn't fit in very well with that, so the wing might be more suited as sort of the performance end. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the performance difference is. So, you know, at the top of the fleet, they're already running sails and masts and booms are higher tech than the guys at the middle of the back of the fleet anyway, so in that sense it might not be that different. But I certainly don't want to see the class suffer because we've, you know, started to use wings. And we'd always joked, a few of us that had talked about it, that if it was bad for the class, I'd be the first to say that we shouldn't perhaps be doing this. But we'd always joke we would then perhaps do the Tiny America's Cup with moths and wings as a silly match race for Gadda, just for those of us who are keen to have a go on a small scale, because it's nice, because you can do testing is easy, and it fits in a workshop and fits on a trailer and things. It's practical, you can walk around with it under one arm kind of thing.
Yeah. And looking at the bigger picture and further down the line for a broader aspect of sailing. Do you think we are on the cusp of a big change?
I don't think so. You'll always have the practical aspects will define it. You know, you just being here with the TPs who were coming in the other day and 25 knot Mistral, and we were saying, flip, imagine if we're coming in here with wings. You know, that's a whole new ball game compared to just clicking the halyard lock and dropping your main. So, you know, the Moth is easy because you sail in, you capsize it, and it's easy to take a rig down. So the Moth, you know, is you know, I'm pleased with how practical the Moth has actually been, and it's, you know, you can be made to work and it's not too hard, but I've still got to put it in a box and things, and it's not quite like rolling up a mainsail. So I think at the performance end, it's exciting times. You know, it's interesting, it's a whole different game, and it's fascinating, you know, seeing everyone trying to busy catch up and learn about them and things. So that's quite interesting. But as for the bigger picture, I think there'll be a number of things that will always be an issue, that will always be against it. So we'll see more of them, but I don't think it will be the thing that suddenly revolutionises sailing. It's just another evolutionary step in many ways, I think.
But a very exciting move for sailing nonetheless.
Personally, I find it quite interesting. I'm sure there's plenty that aren't so keen on in things, but I've come from an aero sort of background, so quite interested in it in terms of the technology and things. So yeah, personally find it quite interesting as a design challenge and things.
And given the large amount of Team Origin branded clothing that you're wearing, there's a team that's been pretty interested in your experience as well.
I think I was quite fortunate to have been doing the Moth on sort of as a side thing, and was coaching within Origin, and it was quite nice to sort of just be able to say, oh, by the way, you might be interested in something I've got in my garage. So it's been fun chatting to the guys and sort of bring people up to speed a bit on that, on what we might face coming up soon.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Adam. Thanks very much for that, and we look forward to seeing what happens next.
Thank you.
And finally, we talked to something of a helming legend, Britain's Tim Powell, who again, after a lengthy Volvo career, is now making new waves with Rahn 2. I last caught up with Tim back in 2006 after he completed the Volvo on Ericsson, and I asked how things have been in the intervening period.
Well, I've been keeping myself pretty busy. As you mentioned previously, kind of been involved with the Rahn project programme since 2007 when we did the Fastnet race with Zenstrom's cruising boat Yanni. We then kind of bought the old TP52 patches, which we IRC'd and raced around the UK, Cork Week, Cows Week, took it over to America for Key West SORC, and then in the process of sailing that boat, we started on the IRC 72 that is out there racing at the moment, Rahn 2. So, I mean, as I say, it's been a pretty busy few years since 2006.
It sounds that way. What are the major differences between what you're sailing now compared to the Volvo 70 that I last saw you on?
Generally speaking, well, you get to go to a nice bed each evening, which is always a bonus. But the kind of racing we're doing now is very predominantly inshore racing. We're doing the classics, such as we won the Fastnet race last year overall. We've done the Middle Sea race. We did the Sydney Hobart last year, where we won our division. So we do kind of take part in what you would describe as the classic yacht races, the Newport Bermuda being another one. This year, we are going back down to do the Sydney Hobart race, second year running, and it's just one of those, you know, the boat does predominantly inshore, but still we do a reasonable amount of offshore, which, you know, we draw on a lot of ex-Volvo people to come and sail with us and help us get around the racetrack.
And what, as actually helming and sailing, what are the pluses of Rahn 2?
Basically, I mean, Rahn 2, it's a modern IRC racing design. And to be honest, IRC does a very, very nice job of just creating really good boats to go sailing in. You know, they are fast. You know, we go upwind at 11 knots and we go downwind, you know, faster than wind speed, you know, up until 16, 17 knots. So they're just really nice boats to go sailing in. Obviously, they're not as quick as a Volvo 70 on an ocean race or anything like that because it's quite a bit heavier. We also have quite a lot of extra men. You know, we sail the boat with 21 people, whereas a Volvo boat sails with 14 people. So, you know, there's a whole crew work side to the racing it, which is quite appealing. You know, trying to get it right and trying to go around the corners as well as you can is, you know, it takes a lot of practice to get it right.
And getting it right, you certainly are with the victories you've had over the last couple of years now. But Tim, you've got to take a little bit of time off the wheel at the moment, haven't you? What's happened?
Well, to be fair, I haven't been steering the boat this year. I steered it last year, but this year Nicholas Lindstrom, the owner, has kind of stepped up and he's taken on helming duties and doing a really good job so far. You know, I think we remain undefeated this year in the regattas that Ryan Tew has done. So, you know, Nicholas is doing a fantastic job. But myself, I had a bit of an accident off the boat in Sardinia at the Maxi Worlds where I stupidly fell over and broke my collarbone. So I've just been in for an operation. An operation to plate it and screw my collarbone back together again, and basically can't do anything physical for about 6 weeks while I recuperate from it.
Nice. But you did win the mini maxis at the Maxi Worlds, and will you be all right though for the Hobart?
No, the doctors all give me a big thumbs up for Hobart and say I should be absolutely fine for that, so back to full strength, and you know, looking forward to going down there to do the great race, so to speak.
Well, Tim, hopefully we'll be able to hear from you around the time of the Sydney to Hobart, and especially if you manage to win it again, that would be very splendid. So, but thanks very much for joining us, and get well soon. Well, that's it for this latest edition of Jibe Talkin'. Please join us next time when we'll have all the big news and names from the world of sailing. And remember, for all things Volvo Ocean Race, check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.com.